everyone, welcome back to the Earthdawn Survival Guide, the podcast for all disciplines, paths, players, and game masters, with your questers Josh and Dan. I am Dan.
I am Josh.
And on today's podcast, we will be discussing all things non-thornical, because we're going to talk about Shosara, the city itself, but not the blood elves. Shosara, these are just regular elves anymore? I forget. I have lost track.
They're elves from Shosara. Shosara is not a blood elf.
Yeah.
They were a offshoot of Wyrmwood, but they have their own culture and do not have thorns poking out from inside their bodies.
Yeah. So I figured I'd just clarify that because it's been a while since we talked about elves and I've forgotten everything I learned a while ago. So my fault. Anyway, we're going to talk about the actual city's creation and its culture and geography and things like that. So it's going to be a long, meandering, world-building type discussion. So strap in! Kidding. I have no idea. In part of the essay in the Elven Nations book, I stared right at the screen and forgot how to read, is the culture and the belief system of Shosara is vastly different from the Bloodwood, where they, I can't say got their start, but they emigrated from. The separation of Shosara from the Bloodwood planted the pervading
idea. It wasn't even the Bloodwood, it was Wyrmwood.
Sorry,
at the Wyrmwood. Time that all that went down.
Yes! I'm very tired. Please.
I want to avoid us getting emails and messages from people saying,
it was not Bloodwood.
Oh, no, let's get it right the first time. I'm absolutely all in favor of that. Let's save the emails for other better things. So,
like AI discussion.
Exactly. The separation of Shosara from Bloodwood, from Wyrmwood, planted the pervading idea that Shosarans could now fully embrace the paths of Dreas T. Morel, the Wheel of Life. Elves shared this idea in the founding of Shosara with all the name givers in and around the area. So they spread this wonderful idea about the Wheel of Life. Care to just give us a quick reminder on the Wheel of Life?
Yeah, the Wheel of Life is a philosophical approach to life that is elven in origin. The idea being that during the course of one's life, one passes through various stages. There are five stages on the traditional Wheel of Life. I don't remember the order, but there's the Path of Scholars, the Path of Warriors, the Path of the Traveler. The Path of Lords is the last one. I don't remember really what the order of it is. But that each of them is associated with particular colors and disciplines and points in your life. There's kind of like a pseudo-astrological kind of aspect to it in a way.
Yeah.
The idea is that you, through the course of your life, pass through these various stages, and at each of them, you kind of start a new chapter in your life, moving away from the old and moving into the new. There are a couple of different schools of thought about it. There are the strict followers and the loose followers. The strict followers are a lot more, for lack of a better term, orthodox about it, and take the whole thing a lot less metaphorically, and instead are like, well, the path of travelers is associated with this discipline, so obviously it doesn't make a whole lot of sense for probably the vast majority of elves, because they aren't adepts.
Fair.
But still, there is a pervasive aspect of this in terms of the way that the culture is shaped, because it derived from elven philosophy, particularly from Wyrmwood. So that's the Wheel of Life in a nutshell.
Fair enough. I like the quote in the essay itself. The great wheel turns for everyone, elf or not. One must adapt and grow. Those that fail to grow stagnate or collapse. Which, of course, is the elven way of saying adapt or die.
Just, you know, more flowery language.
Exactly. Welcome to elves. So yeah, the Shosarans also believe that all elves possess a part of Oak Heart within themselves. And they created, therefore, the city of Shosara, which stands at the western end of a hilly peninsula. And I love the fact that there's a map in the back of the book. It was very helpful to absorb all of this because I occasionally get my east and my west completely screwed up. So as we're going to talk about Shosara itself, we're going to be heading eastward the entire time. So the sea, and then moving just a little bit inward, this hilly peninsula, the Gwyn Sea. The city of Shasara is also known as the City of Sails because there's so much sailing going on from its ports. This is a concave shore, so if you know what concave is, you're in good shape. If you know what convex is, you're in even better shape. It's not convex, it's concave.
Which basically means that if you...
So the concave part of the spoon holds the soup, the convex part of the spoon does not.
It makes kind of like an arc or half circle type shape, but it's kind of going into the peninsula, into the land, rather than like emerging out as a blob off of it.
Exactly. So it's not bulbous. So on the northwestern side of this strip of land, making part of the concave shoreline, is the Great Lighthouse. We will get to that later. There's also a Grand Arsenal at the southwestern end. So you have northwest, southwest. So if you were looking at a C, this is a reverse C on the map. If you're looking at the letter C in Arabic letters, the top part and the bottom part of that C, the points, have the lighthouse and the Grand Arsenal. The Grand Arsenal is the fortress of the free companies. And this is where you find the soldiers and arms makers and shipbuilders. So that's what goes on down there. The concave shoreline of the city of Shasara is almost completely all docks for boats and seafaring vessels. Dockside is the residences and warehouses, markets, and inns. This is the busy, bustling, hustling place of the city of Shasara. As we go further east, Old City is where the former citadel was and is just east of the dockside on a hill, more like a plateau, actually, because they had to build it on flat ground. And then further again to the east is the Garden District, and this is where they have the very fancy Rennell Estates. Thoughts so far on the composition of the city?
Yeah, it's relatively straightforward, as is the case with a lot of civic growth.
Yeah.
The primary traffic sort of in and out of the area is through the waterfront, and therefore that's where a lot of the businesses and residences and people live and work and do everything. As you get progressively farther away from that, things get a little bit fancier, a little bit different.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll get to the Great Lighthouse now, because it's just how we're going to organize things. This is kind of how we took notes out of the book. So the Great Lighthouse, I love that there's a picture of the book as well, fantastic art, is also a place of scholarly research and magical study. So it's not just somebody goes over there and lights the thing when they need to in a storm. It's the fact that this is where the scholars are sponsored by the Rennells, and therefore it's a school.
Yeah.
It's a magical school.
It is not just a navigation aid. It is, in a sense, kind of the lighthouse is a symbol of the culture.
Mm-hmm.
The way that they approach learning and study and research as something that is casting a light and guiding the society and the culture, kind of broadly speaking, this symbol on multiple levels, both as a seafaring culture, but also as a sense of the learning and study that has long been an important aspect of Elvish culture broadly, is represented by this lighthouse, which helps not only illuminate things as knowledge would, but also to guide those that are seeking to safety. And there's a whole bunch of like metaphors and stuff that you can call to mind for this.
Oh yeah. And the lighthouse serves multiple purposes, really. It's as we said, the magical school, it's a beacon in a storm, but the illumination beacon itself, the actual light of the lighthouse, is a sphere of true fire surrounded by mirrors enchanted to spin at a steady rate. So it doesn't need lighting. It's just always on. Which is, of course, the magical cool part of Earthdawn right there. And the lighthouse has berths for airships along its outside structure. So really, you've got even more docks for airships at the lighthouse itself. So it really is a multifunctional part of the city.
There isn't a lot of discussion of airships with regards to Shasara, and I suspect that airships are probably even more rare in Shasara than they are in Barsave.
Mm-hmm.
And I suspect that maybe most of the airships that are there are probably from elsewhere. Envoys, either, you know, merchant vessels taking the very long trek, say, from Barsave up to Shosara, or Theron airships, because, of course, Shosara does not have the negative relationship with Thera that Barsave does in general.
Fair.
So that would be something to keep in mind as well. But just because the culture is so heavily seafaring, I don't imagine that a lot of the work would necessarily have gone to developing a real significant air fleet of any sort.
Agreed. Especially since the sea is right there.
Yeah.
So that's
the thing, right? Barsave, while it does have a pretty impressive river network, is largely landlocked.
Yeah.
And so airship technology with the Crystal Raiders and stuff like that is something that developed within that environment.
Mm-hmm.
And so the environment kind of shaped the development of the things that people needed in order to do what they had to do. In a place like Shosara, where there is a very extensive shoreline and sea and so much that is done to live on and out of the sea, fishing and true water gathering and various all sorts of other things, airship technology is not something that is quite as necessary.
Yeah.
Because the Shosaran communities, not just the city itself, but the other name-giver communities, are all more or less on the shore.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's not really a need to have airships to be able to get to places because everything's got water access. And water ships don't require extensive amounts of enchantment and resources.
Exactly.
You need wood, but you can make sailing ships without needing magic. Scads of true elements and massive enchantment stuff and whatnot.
Yeah. So they're a whole lot cheaper to produce those than they are an airship.
Yeah, absolutely.
So by all means. So to the south of the docks, curving all the way around, is the Grand Arsenal. And this kind of sounds like what you'd think it would be, which is kind of a fortification. And this is a high-walled central keep, and all surrounding it are inland, are barracks, smithies, storerooms, private docks. This is your military outpost, essentially.
Yeah.
I have that wrong.
It is sort of the headquarters out of which the free companies operate, and we haven't really talked about them yet. I don't know if you've got them in your notes to talk about here later.
Not really.
Not really?
This is a geographic thing.
They are sort of the city's equivalent of like the militia slash pseudo-military force. They're kind of like the champions of Trevar, which is to say they're kind of independent, but they're also in service to the city. The free companies are often the ones that are sent out to do particular tasks. It would be a fairly easy framework for a Shosaran game to have the player characters be affiliated with the free companies and so be able to do missions, be given tasks and adventure hooks and stuff as part of the free companies.
Yeah.
And that may be something we can talk about in a little bit more depth later, but that is a not insignificant portion of Shosaran culture.
Yeah. I just figured we'd break down the geography in this episode and move on to the other, you know, each aspect of the city in one episode at a time. We'll see how long this one takes. So dockside. So we have the lighthouse. We have the Grand Arsenal. Can't remember the names of any of these things. And then we have dockside, which is, of course, the concave, not convex, concave terrain there. I know. This is where I said the tightly packed homes of most residents, they're all in blocks. They at least organized it well. And so it's fairly straightforward as far as how things are organized in the dockside. And there is a central courtyard, kind of like, I guess, Central Park in Manhattan, for lack of a better example, more well-known. There is a shrine to Corollis in this central courtyard. There's the largest market built around an actual shrine exists in Dockside. And so this is an ode to the commerce going on all around this area.
Yeah. One of the things to keep in mind, and this is the case for bar save as well when you're talking about any sizable community, but just with regards to the spiritual practices of bar save and the sort of greater elven diaspora, which includes Thera.
Yeah.
Because Thera was founded by exiles from the wood, is the older style wherein rather than having a particular passion that you follow, unless you're a questor, questors are kind of a special case.
Mm-hmm.
But for the most part, most people will probably make some obeisance, offering, tradition, practice, or whatever.
Yeah.
To the passion that is in line with whatever it is that they are trying to accomplish, mm-hmm. you know, with any particular thing. Some people might favor certain passions over others, but they are all something that people are kind of aware of, even if they don't necessarily have a direct experience with the passion themselves. They probably know people who have. I think that those kind of experiences are, while not common, probably not super rare either.
Fair.
Certainly the fact that questors appear to be given magical abilities as a result of their devotion to a particular passion.
Mm-hmm.
We need to be careful not to impose our several centuries of Western religious tradition and practice mm-hmm. and impose it on a system where that is not really applicable.
Agreed.
I could even see cases where people might maybe make a token, whatever, to a mad passion if the circumstances were particularly appropriate, or
yeah.
trying to do something to turn their eyes away from a particular endeavor. Those are enhancements or things that you can think of. I would imagine that any sizable community that has a market, a shrine to Corollis or something along those lines, is probably going to be located in or near that because that is an area of his purview.
Yeah.
And so having some kind of place where people could make their devotions in the pursuit of commerce and trade would be common.
Agreed. So that's pretty much what you need to know about Dockside. Otherwise, play with it as you will. Moving inland, the old city. This is the old city houses the government building hosting the Council of Princes and the Grand Assembly. We'll get to those in a minute or so. It also houses the wealthy merchants and the wealthy craftsmen, who do far less business, but when they do business, it's worth a lot of money. So your jewelers, things like that. And since this is the spot where the Council of Princes and the Grand Assembly reside, there is, of course, the palace. This is the crown jewel building of Old City. It is oblong and bisected. It is glass-domed and has a massive amphitheater, which seats 1,000. So they're not kidding about a massive amphitheater for something this size. This isn't, and the other side is the onion-shaped dome of the Council of Princes. So you've got two domed buildings kind of side by side called the palace.
Yeah. The palace is where the government operates out of. There are two pieces, and we may go into this in more depth at another time, but mm-hmm. there's sort of two big pieces of the Shosaran government. The Council of Princes and the Grand Assembly. The Grand Assembly, it's vaguely similar to like the House of Commons and the House of Lords in
England,
British Parliament.
Yeah.
Not exactly, but that's kind of like the idea, perhaps.
Fair.
That the Grand Assembly are the ones that handle the day-to-day operations of the state of Shosara. And the Council of Princes are the ones that have a little bit more authority in certain matters.
Yeah.
The Council handles more of the international relations, mm-hmm. dealing with other powers and stuff, rather than dealing with the management of infrastructure and civic services and things like that.
Yeah, totally. I have notes on these. So we can flesh out the Council of Princes since we're on that topic at the moment. So this is composed of leaders of the most prominent Renels in Shosara. It mostly stays at around 5 members, sometimes 4, sometimes 6, but whatever. Right now it's hanging around 5. And the High Prince is selected from their members as well. And to Josh's point, handles the long-term affairs, anything to deal with war, international trade, any diplomacy between other kingdoms and other areas and things like that. So this is the really highfalutin respecting.
Yeah, setting out the grand plan, the overall,
yeah,
for lack of a better term, strategy of what Shosara wants to achieve long-term.
Yeah.
Whereas the Grand Assembly then takes those goals and builds more specific policies in order to hopefully go and enact that,
yeah,
grander design.
Yeah, because the Grand Assembly is made of many smaller assemblies, and this is where it gets kind of complicated. Any assembly could be like a ship crew, a neighborhood, a block, a community, a section of the city, one of those things. And so in the Grand Assembly, all voices are welcome. And one of that assembly, again, ship crew, neighborhood, yada yada, is appointed to speak on behalf of that group on a larger scale, and they all vote, and majority always rules. And the Grand Assembly handles all the day-to-day affairs in and around Shosara. Any territory disputes, any zoning issues, blah, 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 stuff like, you know, usual bureaucratic whatnot.
Yeah. A combination both of legislature and judiciary.
Yes.
The members of the Grand Assembly and the Grand Assembly at large helps manage disputes between different groups within Shosara, deciding collectively, in a certain sense, what's going to happen with stuff.
Agreed. So that's the government, which is housed in Old City, operates in the palace, where they have an amphitheater for one dome that seats 1,000, and the other dome is for the Council of Princes. So whatever the insides look like, knock yourself out. There's not too much detail on that. If you're ever going to use it, go for it. But I think plenty of detail here.
Fancy and elaborate and expensive and beautiful and whatnot.
Absolutely. I just love the fact that it's glass domed with an amphitheater. That just reminds me of the Sphere in Las Vegas for some reason.
It makes sense that there would be an amphitheater. Like, if you're going to have a large governing body like the Grand Assembly, there would need to be a large space for them to
hash it out.
To be, to hash it out and have their debates and discussions and various other things.
Totally. So the last section, only a couple of notes on this one, is just again further to the east, is the Garden District. And this is the opulent community. This is your topiaries and hedgerows and private shrines, private libraries, private collections of art, lavish
manor houses,
gardens, and garden mazes and things like that, where they have literally hired elementalists to control the weather for the gardens. So you can find an estate, which of course is run by an Elven Rennell, where they've hired their own elementalist, probably from the lighthouse where they're interning, because they, again, the mages at the inn at the lighthouse are sponsored by these Rennells. This is where they can kind of go work it off, you know, work study project, and begin to learn to control the weather just for that estate.
Yeah. The relative wealth of Shosara, dockside, you've got the working class, the vast majority of the population, the people who do the day-to-day tasks, and your artisans and craftsmen and smiths and merchants and all of that stuff. And then as you head inland, as you head east, things get gradually more and more fancy and opulent and
rich,
richer people. And so the folks in the Old City are the wealthier merchants and more highly skilled craftsmen, perhaps ones that practice more jewelers and things like that, that have more expensive
needs,
stuff that they do.
Yeah.
And also, of course, being around the seat of power, the government halls, there's a certain amount of prestige and whatnot that goes along with that. And then, of course, you get even further away from the noise and bustle of the city. You get to the place where all of the rich folk live with their elaborate estates and manors and so forth.
Yeah.
And the gardens and whatnot that the different families have are often themed on certain ideas and whatnot. For example, it does mention that the Lariscova Rennell intentionally have modeled their gardens after pre-Scourge Wormwood working in their whole thing as emigrants from the wood, but also like establishing that they perhaps have a claim to the seat of Elvendom that has been abdicated in a way, perhaps by Alatia's court.
Exactly. So I like the design of the city. I like the details that are thrown into this one. I think it's a, since they are, again, more welcoming and not as isolationist as the Bloodwood ever has been, I think this is a whole lot more to work with as a setting or some campaign ideas. Further thoughts from you?
Yeah. Again, I like Shosara as a community, as a setting, as a place. I think, broadly speaking, the peninsula and the lands surrounding the Gwyn Sea and the hints of stuff that we get from this are all ripe with adventure possibilities. Mm-hmm. And it's distinct enough in its way that you can sort of still feel the ties to Earthdawn as we largely know it from Barsave, but it's still kind of its own thing with its own flavor and its own style.
Yeah.
And certainly, in some ways, easier to deal with as a base for a campaign. You could do a lot more sort of like traditional stuff with a Shosarin-based game than you could with the Bloodwood, which does tend to lend itself towards certain styles, certain goals, certain genres of play.
If Fossa were still doing boxed sets, I could so see Shosara having its own boxed set. Like,
Shosara, like honestly, it would be kind of interesting to see. There's some information, but not a lot of information that's presented either about Shosara or Sariatha in this book. It would be kind of neat in one sense to see that be expanded upon.
Yeah.
But at the same token, is that something that would be worth the resources to put into? I don't know.
No, like I said, I could see it standing as its own setting that you could just stay in for a very long time.
Oh, no, absolutely.
Yeah. And I would love to see Rusty Zimmerman write a novel in this setting. I think it'd be cool. That's just me. Wish list from another dimension. There you are.
Yeah.
He's probably way too busy to even hear this, much less grant the request. So any final thoughts on this geographical aspect and governmental aspect of Shosara?
No, not really. Like I said, we're kind of skimming along at a higher level here.
Yeah.
We'll get a little bit more into the politics of things another time and maybe talk about some of the hooks and other ideas that are going on around. But
yeah,
I like Shosara. Of the new stuff that we have come up with, it is pretty reasonably high up there in terms of my appreciation and enjoyment of it.
Absolutely. I'm digging this setting. I'm a little biased. It doesn't read as dry as the Bloodwood, but that's me.
Get that.
No big deal. So until next time, folks, either grow, stagnate, or collapse. Fear legend.
Good night, everybody.